Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Season 5, Episode 46. Continuing with Coal Mine's Own. Last week we talked to Kelly Finnegan from the Monophonics. Today we have a special treat for you. We have Matt Stubbs, the lead guitarist for GA20, a new traditional blues revival based out of the East Coast, the Northeast to be more specific, featuring Pat Ferdy and Tim Carman. Their last album in 2018 skyrocketed to the top of the Billboard Blues chart, and they're here today to talk about their new Coal Mine album, Crackdown. They have an intensive tour schedule, and we're going to talk about more of that on today's podcast. Please help me welcome Matt Stubbs. So Matt Stubbs, welcome. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Excellent. No, of course, of course. So this is 88.5 At Home Interviews based in Los Angeles, Deeper Grooves. Got a podcast and a show on the station as well, 9 p.m. on Friday nights. Love to talk to artists about what they're doing and happy to connect. We talked with one of your label mates recently as well from the Monophonics, Kelly Finnegan. So we know you guys are going to be going on tour. We'll definitely chat about that as well as your upcoming release for Crackdown. But welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, you come with like a lot of accolades and experience also as amazing blues guitarist, but also your work with Charlie Musselwhite and beyond. So yeah, super to get into it. Let's talk about the two singles that are out right now, Drive Run and Easy on the Eyes, which from the upcoming Crackdown. Like, what inspired you to create and produce this set of music?
So this is our third LP as a band. But actually, this was recorded as our second LP. This was the follow-up to our first record, Lonely Soul. It was all done, ready to go. And then we know what happened, you know, in 2020. So we ended up hitting pause on releasing it because we wanted to make sure we could get out on tour and promote the record. So yeah, this was just a follow-up to Lonely Soul, kind of taking traditional blues, stuff that we love, Chicago blues, 50s and 60s blues music, and just writing songs in that style, our own songs, and trying to pay tribute to our heroes, you know, from that era.
Yeah, well, I originally understood you. Now, the name GA20, for people who don't know you, comes from your amplifier, correct?
GA20 is a Gibson amplifier that was made from, I think, 49 to 1961. So there are a few different models of the GA20. But yeah, we started the band. That was the amp I was using, what we had in the studio for the first record. And every record we've done since, we always record with those.
And you've got what I would say a non-traditional setup. It's a trio, no bass, two guitars.
Two guitars and drums, yeah.
Right.
A lot of bands, blues bands more specifically, out of Chicago, kind of had that setup through the years in the 50s, 60s, all the way into the 70s, like Hound Dog Taylor, Little Walter. There's these records, when you listen to them, you might not realize there's not a bass guitar there. There's two guitars. Usually one's playing the bottom bass part, the other one's playing the upper chords or solo part. So when Pat and I started the band, the concept was to do really stripped down Chicago blues and keep it as simple as possible. And that's not just musically, but just everything. Hiring musicians, more people, more problems. So we just kind of played. We started playing the songs that didn't have bass and then just morphed into figuring out how to do it without bass. And we've never added a bass player.
Yeah. And a lot of great acts. I mean, I think of, you know, the White Stripes, they just had guitar, drums, yep. No bass. Black Keys, guitar, drums, no bass, yep. In the beginning. So I think that's great. Now, I came to know your group because of your amazing Hound Dog Taylor record. And Hound Dog, I don't think necessarily it's a household name to a lot of people. And from Chicago Blues, obviously, in relation to Coco Taylor, Queen of Chicago Blues. And and Buddy Guy with Legends there. And I'm a huge fan of Willie Dixon, Poet of the Blues, also based on Chess and that area and stuff too. So I guess kind of what's the origins? How did you get into blues as a medium and guitar?
I got into blues at a pretty young age. I started playing guitar at 13, and by 14 or 15, I started to dive into blues. And by 16 or 17, I was pretty much exclusively into traditional blues, 50s and early 60s. I grew up, my father is a guitarist, so in the house, he would always have band practice, and I would go to his gigs. And so I was exposed to it, way before I even started guitar. But once I got into guitar, he would bring me to his gigs, but also just bands coming through on tour. blues jams, everything, concerts, and it was just full on. But for whatever reason, blues always spoke to me more than other styles of music, and started in on blues through, I guess it was Lenny Kravitz, maybe. And my father's like, if you like Lenny Kravitz, you're going to like Jimi Hendrix. And then Jimi Hendrix led to Buddy Guy, and then and so on. And it happened very quickly. It happened within a year or two. And I had blinders on probably from age 16 and probably early 20s, 23, 24, where I almost exclusively listened to traditional blues. Now I listen to a lot of different styles and produce different stuff, but the foundation was definitely blues guitar and blues music.
Yeah, and I like that. I love how people take you through that music history. They say, you know, like, maybe you came into it through samples or whatever, but it's like, okay, you got to go back to like their influences and then their influences as far as you can go back with recorded music, because you learn something from all those decades. I think I started listening to like T-Bone Walker, and that was like 40s blues, and early B.B. King, and then building up, obviously, B.B. King Live at the Regal, one of the best live albums.
That was one of my first blues records my father got me. Yep.
So I love all of that stuff. Now, you're currently going to be on tour for the Sage Motel tour with you and other coal mine artists. So you have Kelly Finnegan, Modaphonics, and Kendra Morris, who I saw on Karma Chief open with Neil Francis earlier this year. So how is it to kind of be packaged on a bill like that together?
It's great. I mean, I love Coal Mine Karma Chief label. They're family at this point. We're the only blues band on the whole label. It's mostly, as you know, probably soul music and different indie stuff. So it's kind of fun to be that band, but also have a label that's very supportive. It's not like, oh, we're the blues band. They don't care. Like, they get behind us. Also, I like all the music on the label. So I'm looking forward to, I have never met Kendra in person yet. So I'm looking forward to that. And Kelly, I've seen him live, but I don't know if we've ever hung out. So it's going to be fun, you know, to be out there. We're out, I think there's 24, 25 shows. So we'll be spending a lot of time together.
Any place in particular looking forward to being on the tour?
There's a few. I used to live in LA. So I'm looking forward to coming back to LA. Love Seattle, Denver, Chicago. I mean, I'm looking forward to all of them. There's not a show I'm not looking forward to on this tour.
Awesome. And so, how did you come to be a part of the Coal Mine family, Terry and his brother? How did that all come about?
When Pat, the singer of GA20, and I started the band, we didn't start the band with, we're going to do this thing and make it and go out, make records and tour. It was really, I found myself with a year off from Charlie Musselwhite because he was going on tour with Ben Harper. And It was the first time in, I think, 12 years that I wasn't on tour with him. Pat was a friend around town. And I just didn't know what I didn't want to get a job. So I was like, what do you want? You want to start a Chicago blues band? He was really getting into that style at the time. So we just started it. Like I said, keep it simple. We played at little wine bars. Like, it was not a very glamorous start by any means. And within 6 months of that, we had written some songs at these little gigs we would do. And I just had an idea to go make a demo. I'm like, let's go in. I think my girlfriend won like a raffle or something at a music event. And I had a day worth of studio time at a really good studio called Q Division no one bid on it. We bid on it. I got it really was half of what it should have been. So we used that little bit of time to go in and made the demo. And I sent it to two labels. I sent it to Coal Mine and I sent it to Alligator Records, which is a Chicago blues label. They both got back to me around the same time, and Alligator wasn't interested and Coal Mine loved it, but wanted it to be a full length. So we went back in and finished it. And that ended up being Lonely Soul. So it was very, you know, a lot of luck. And Terry, the owner of Coal Mine, and I become very good friends. I think we're a lot alike as far as musical taste. So we hit it off right away, first phone call, which I feel very lucky about that. Because usually getting a record deal is hard, especially if you're a blues band.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, definitely, I understand why you would pitch Alligator, especially in the Chicago blues vein. They have had so many amazing acts, but Coal Mine is glad, you know, with Karma Chief, it allows them to be able to branch out, do some different stuff from what they were doing in the past. And I think anyone that wants to continue in this business has to constantly be looking for newness. You can't do the same thing twice. So it's good to have diversity within the platform. Now, we talked a little bit about your musical influences, and we talked about actually going through that time where you're out, not with Charlie Musselwhite. So now I know on your first record, you did have Charlie Musselwhite and Luther Dixon. on it. And so, like, what was it like to have them on your project versus the other way around?
It was awesome. I wasn't sure they were going to do it. We had this song in mind, and I had asked Charlie, I'm just in passing, he actually came through Boston with Ben Harper, and it was a Monday and a Tuesday. They did two nights, or Sunday, Monday they were doing, and they were actually, it was really odd. They were playing this club called the Sinclair in Cambridge, and I happened to be playing the smaller venue out front on the Monday with my other band. I had an instrumental band called the Antiguas, and they were in the back. So I went to the show, and then he came to my show, sat in, and then the next day we had arranged it that he came to the studio and played some harp on it. And Luther, I became friends with him through Charlie, doing shows, tours together. And at the time, Pat hadn't picked up slide guitar yet. We wanted slide on a song. So I just asked Luther to do it. He's super cool. No problem. You know, it's good. We're lucky.
Definitely. I mean, but obviously you being a great guitarist and touring for years with Charlie Musselwhite opened up that door. So it didn't just land in your lap. Now, did any of those musicians that you've seen, you know, the really just iconic, I mean, Charlie's been around, has played with everybody, have they given you any kind of musical advice that has helped you?
Charlie advice, I think playing with Charlie's given me opportunities to back up other legendary blues people. Like I've been able to, we were on tour and I was backing up James Cotton for a while, and John Hammond. And before Charlie, I would do tours with guys like Junior Watson. I played bass behind him, James Harmon, and sometimes advice, but more just, I think the learning side of things for me would be, I would ask just them questions about music, but more so being on stage and listening and trying to accompany them and back them up rather than getting up there and just trying to shred on guitar and show them off. Usually most of the people I mentioned are, I'm accompanying them. They're either harmonica players or guitar players. So it's, for me, it's always been about ensemble playing more than shredding. And when you play with those old school guys, that's where they're coming from too. So a lot of modern stuff, I don't feel like, I don't know, a lot of the modern blues stuff, I don't really hear that in the composition. So I think that's a big one for me. I think that's kind of shaped the way I approach playing on stage with guys like that or recording records.
Yeah, and it's interesting you had mentioned about the songwriting. You're very, like, cognizant of the songwriting. In fact, I read in the press release they sent me that it's song-based traditional electric blues, which is very specific. That, you know, it is really, when you think of people like Willie Dixon writing a lot of songs for Howling Wolf and Muddy Waters, it really is the song as a construct. And because blues a lot of time is working within that 12-bar frame, when I was studying music years ago in Boston at Berkeley, years ago, at first I had no understanding of blues because I just thought it's just the same thing. It's very monotonous.
Right, and then, right, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you got 12 bar and, you know, you got the one, you got the four, you got the five, you're good to go, you know, but, and everything's in G. So how did you kind of, I guess, understand the appreciating of the songwriting, not only from the cathartic, obviously they're expressing emotion, deep feeling, and it can be up blues, sad blues, everything in between, but like, the songwriting in that medium, like how do you, and focus on your own songwriting?
Well, I think it probably all starts with the stuff that I enjoyed listening to from the start, traditional blues, you know, the way those songs are structured and written and produced too, like the side of production, the way they sound when they're recording, but also going out a lot as a little kid. I mean, from age 15 to probably 25, I was going out 3, 4, 5 nights a week, going to see live music. Like my father would bring me out when I was an adult. I moved to LA, I'd go out and just finding the people that made the music that I liked and really trying to absorb it and shut up and listen or ask them questions. The stuff that speaks to me that's blues is that it's like a story. I'm a sucker for a melody, like a really good melody. It can be very simple, but it usually is. And a vibe. You know, like all my favorite songs have some sort of emotional thing going on or a vibe. And all the artists I listen to, like if you listen to like Slim Harpo or whatever, guys like that, it's all song-based. You know, it's a 3-minute song. There's a solo, but the solo accompanies the song. The song doesn't accompany the solo, where a lot of modern blues, to my ear, they're just waiting to, you know, start that solo. You know, it's a platform to solo. And that's, to me, that's not type of blues I listen to or try to write. It's not too many people really writing traditional blues right now. So I think it's easy to kind of stand out a little bit, at least right now. Maybe.
Yeah. Now let's backtrack a little bit. Now, again, I said you had done kind of this tribute album in a way to Hound Dog Taylor. Reminded me a lot of Black Keys, how they did their original tribute to Junior Kimbrough. So it's nice to see people like passing that torch and shining light on people who just may in the modern times not be as popular. And so when you were going to do that, I mean, obviously Chicago Blues is Buddy Guy, there's other people. And Buddy Guy is still around, still touring, still hopping off stage. Amazing. But I guess kind of like, was that like the end all be all for you? Like something about his music, the songwriting, the way it was done, you wanted to be able to make an album tributing that, or were you not really thinking that at the time?
That record, it was just by chance how it happened. I had never sat around ever in my life and thought about doing a tribute record. It was not even a thought of ever doing that. I try to write original music, and if we cover a song or two, but the way that happened was, like I said earlier, Crackdown was recorded and done and ready to go. And then everything shut down and we talked to label, and it just seemed like everybody, we didn't know how long it was going to last, the shutdown. So we said, let's put pause on that, see what happens. A few months into the pandemic, I think it was July, Bruce, the owner of Alligator, happened to shoot me an email because he had seen us a few months before the pandemic when we came through Chicago. And, you know, he passed on our first record, but then saw us live and I guess liked it. And he wanted us to do a record with Alligator, not knowing that we already released a record with Coal Mine and we were with them. And in that time frame, I knew it was the 50th anniversary of Hound Dog Taylor's first record and the birth of Alligator. So I was honored Alligator reached out. You know, at first I said, oh no, sorry, we're with this other label. But then the gear started going and I was like, well, it is their 50th anniversary, and GA20 does get compared a lot to Hound Dog, two guitars, drums. He didn't have a bass player. It's raw, you know, Chicago style. So I cooked up the idea. I'm like, well, what if we just do a tribute record? Like, we have all this time right now. Our original record is on pause. Why don't we just do this? We have time. It'll be fun. So I pitched the idea to our label. They loved it. Bruce at Alligator liked it. Wasn't sure how it would work, you know, as far as the business side of things, being a two label release. So we had to figure out how it would work for everybody. We did that. And that was in July when he initially reached out. And then we went into the studio in November. First of all, in between those months, I built a studio at my house because it was the lockdown. We weren't going to go to a studio. So built a studio, figured out what songs we're going to do. We would rehearse out on my deck. And then in November, we went in. It was maybe a day and a half, and we recorded 10 tunes, and that's the record, you know, all live in the room, just like Hound Dog did. No isolation. Researched what guitars they were using and amps and tried to get model. I think Pat bought 5 different Tysco guitars trying to find the one that sounded the closest. So it was fun. It was a really fun project. It passed the time. And I think it all worked out because that album coming out seemed to reach a lot of blues lovers, like deep blues lovers that I don't think they knew who we were yet. So it kind of opened up a lot of doors for Crackdown now, where it's going to be all original stuff.
Nice. Yeah. And I think that's a great way to bring people in sometimes through covers, getting that mass kind of appeal. And you were already getting comparisons. You guys top Billboard blues charts as well.
Yeah.
Of course, you don't necessarily create stuff to do that, but it's nice.
Right. It's nice. No, that one, I think Lonely Soul debuted at 2, and then we did number 2 on Billboard. And then we did release a live EP, I think during the beginning of the pandemic too, that was already recorded. That and Hound Dog both were number 1 the first week, which was a nice surprise. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, so now that you're continuing through the progression, kind of explain to us quickly now, because really the inception of your group is only in the last couple of years, but like the trajectory of like, we started here and now we're here and maybe we plan to go here next, like, How did that kind of journey, hero's journey, go?
Well, I'll start with making the record and getting the record deal. And then from there, the other side of stuff, like the business side, it took us about a year and a half to link up with the right booking agency. Now we have, like, I couldn't be happier. His name is Michael Morris. He's with us. The company is called Mint Talent Group. So because of them and the label, they've opened a lot of doors. We're able to pretty much tour as much as we want right now, which is a lot. And Coal Mine is very supportive. So as far as where we're going to take it, I'm just going to keep going. You know what I mean? I don't like sitting at home. So we're going to just try to reach as many people as we can and play bigger venues, you know, and keep putting out records.
Nice. Now, you've already, like I said, you were able to collaborate with Charlie and Luther Dixon, but if you could wave a magic wand, is there anybody in blues that you would like, I would love to collaborate?
I mean, in blues, there's a couple legendary guys. Like, I love Buddy Guy. I love Jimmy Vaughn's playing. I mean, I was lucky enough, I've toured with both of them, with Charlie, multiple times. It'd be great to do something with them. On the younger side of things in blues, I'm really a big fan of Jontavious Willis and Cedric Burnside is putting out great records. Those guys are friends and really good, you know, but whatever. I mean, if it's good, I'd love to, you know, collaborate with anybody.
Of course. And then, I don't want to pigeonhole you. So even outside of blues, there's somewhere you're like, hey, I think that would be great.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of great country artists coming out right now. Like Colter Wall's amazing. Sierra Farrell, all these acts. We just befriended a guy from Canada. We met on one of these music blues festival cruises, and he's out of Canada. His name's Jeremy Albino. Hmm. He's fantastic. It'd be fun to do something with him. Who knows?
You know? Well, the sky is the limit. Now, as far as the writing process, how do you write with your group? Is it you and the singer and or everyone collaboratively?
Mostly it's Pat and I, and it just depends on the song. We'll both work on stuff. I don't typically write lyrics. I might write a hook, like, you know, one line, say, all right, take it from here. I usually do more of the arranging or coming up with a concept of the song, whether it's progression or a riff or a mood. I've learned with us is I used to write a lot of instrumental music. So when this band started, I would try to write a whole piece that without the lyrics, you know, front to back, and send it to Pat, and then realize very quickly that's not how he works with me. So I'll just come up with a little riff and an idea, or maybe a line, and I send it, and then he spends some time with it, shoots back his idea. And we go back a couple times, and then usually we'll do a rehearsal with the drummer, bring Tim in, work it up. If it feels like it's presentable, we start playing it live. And then usually by the second gig of doing that song live, we know if it's a keeper or not. And if it's a keeper, then we work it out usually live. All the stuff we play that are originals, like very rarely do we write a song and just go into the studio. I think it's only happened with two songs, No No and Two in the Ground, which we released before the Hound Dog record. And the only reason that happened is because there was no gigs. You know, we were in the lockdown. But maybe we'll do more of that. Those came out decent, so you never know.
Do you think you'll do some collaborations with some of your coal mine labor mates as well?
There's been talk of it, especially the owner, Terry, wants that to happen, and that'd be awesome. Yeah, I would love to.
Fun. So then as you kind of look into the future, are you guys already kind of beyond this record thinking about what's next, or is it still too early? So
I'm not beyond this record mentally that way. I mean, the writing of the songs were obviously, it's been a few years and we've been performing them, but I'm looking forward to it. We've kept a couple on the record that we were performing when we wrote them, and then we recorded it. And then, especially when I knew it was getting delayed, we took them off the set list. I'm like, let's take like three or four of these tunes out. And so there's something fresh. So we have that coming. Like this week, we're going to incorporate two or three of the songs that we have not been playing live for years. So it'll feel fresh. But we also have two other records recorded and done and scheduled for release after Crackdown. So
wow.
Business-wise, I am thinking of that. Like, okay, we're going to release this. We're going to tour behind this. See my calendar. And I said, okay, we're going to release this record, this single. So in that regard, I'm like a year and a half down the road already for those two, you know, records.
Yeah. And are you just creating them and banking them because you just have this feeling of like, these songs are ready, let's get them recorded for posterity, we'll put them out? Or were you thinking of them as albums and the form they are?
They're all a little different. So Crackdown was an album. That was before the pandemic. Hound Dog, I explained that. When we went in to do Hound Dog, we recorded the record. It was done. Like I said, it was like a day and a half or 2 days of them. And then it was the band, me, Tim, and Pat, and our engineer, Matt Gerard. We were all, this was before the vaccine when we recorded this. So we all had to take 14 days off before the session. We all got tested. So then we were in this little bubble in my house, right? I built a studio. So as soon as we were done tracking each night, you know, drinks came out and we were drinking. So that last night when we were done the Hound Dog stuff, we were all pretty tipsy. And I had just found these two acoustic guitars in the trash. And Pat and I are not really acoustic blues players by any means. And they were just laying around in the studio. And I just said, hey, let's record two versions of these Hound Dog songs acoustic and see what happens. And we were pretty drunk, except for Pat. He doesn't drink. So we recorded them. And then, you know, the night was over and I went and mixed the Hound Dog record. And when I was done mixing it, I said, let's mix these two. And they came, I was really happy with the way they came out, especially where these guitars were found in the trash. So they came out really good, those songs. And so I scheduled right away. I said, hey, let's, in 2 weeks, let's go, or 3 weeks, let's go in and do an acoustic record. Same team. So that one just came, that was super organic. No, I had no plans to ever make an acoustic album. It was just, the songs came out in a cool way. And we were on a roll. And the other record that's coming out is just a live record we recorded. It's not announced yet, but we recorded it at Plaidrim Records. So Coal Mine.
Oh, record, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a show we did there, and we recorded it direct to tape. And that came out cool. So during the pandemic, I mixed that. So there will be a live record too.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I love live blues records. They just get that a different feeling than the studio. I mean, they both serve their needs for sure. And then obviously love acoustic blues as well. I think.
Yeah.
Especially that's a cool story of how you repurpose these one man's trash into some good music. So as we start to kind of wrap up, I always ask the guests, now that you're into your career a while, what advice would you give a newbie starting out in music, whether it's blues or guitar? You know, they want to tour with other people, they want to have their own thing. Like, what advice would you give?
One thing I think a lot of people overlook, and I think a lot of artists are not, it's not good at it, it's not their strong suit, is the business side of things, wearing a lot of hats. In our band, I wear a lot of hats for GA20. You know, I manage the band. I had to learn. We all know how to do some social media at this point, I think, but like actually knowing how to work social media and buy ads and do all this stuff. The business side of things, you know, being at least halfway decent at business is going to get you a long way. So many musicians are not good at it. And I think, you know, you need luck in music, but if you don't know what you're doing at all with business, you're going to have to hire somebody to do it, like a manager, and you'd be giving away a lot of money in the early days. And if you do that, it's going to be really hard to go out there and tour. You know, for me anyway, that's been a big asset that I've figured out pretty early in my career years ago.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, they don't teach you as a musician that you are a business, regardless, a solopreneur. Right. And then from there, the art is one thing for sure. And then the commerce is a totally different. So luckily you're teamed up with some good people, good labels, good booking agents that have that in mind, and you're learning and growing on that side as well. But yeah, for newbies, it's tough because you got to have, until you're able to get to that level, you got to be everything.
Right. Right. Until you can afford to pay someone, you got to be able to do it yourself.
Exactly. And I mean, there are people you see that are blowing up from like, hey, I'm big on TikTok or whatever. You can use those free platforms to push yourself independent of a label or anything if you really know what you're doing. So, and then what do you want your legacy to be? So obviously it's way too early. You're still a young man. I'm not putting you out the pasture, but when it's all said and done, years into the future, what do you people want to say about Matt Stepps?
Well, for me or the band, I mean, I would love this band to maybe fire up a little bit of a traditional blues revival, whatever that means, or how, I mean, as big as it can get, I don't know. I've said this in a lot of other interviews recently. All these other styles of music I've noticed in the past few years are having these revivals, especially like traditional country music that when I was a kid, a lot of younger people didn't think was cool, right? Traditional country music. Now it's like the hippest thing going in a lot of festivals, and I feel like traditional blues doesn't really have that going on yet. There's a few artists like Jontavious Willis and Burnside, but most bands that I see when I'm out on these blues festivals and stuff are rock blues, which is nothing wrong with that, but they're heavily influenced from like British invasion blues music. And like I said earlier, a lot of it's just about big long guitar solos. And I'm a guitarist. I love guitar solos. But a lot of it's not about the like this vibed out production or songs that I think that's where blues came from. So anyway, if I could spark some more people to A, like it, or B, musicians start doing more of it in that area, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, I remember. I don't remember what the band was. Let's say Velvet Underground or some old band, but like there was a band where the manager was like, they didn't sell a lot of copies of their first record, but everyone that bought a record started a garage band. Like that's right. What we want. Yep. So I can see that, you know, sparking the idea. People, you know, because people are looking at you as an artist and they see you doing it, and it makes them think, you know, I can inspire to do that too. So then how can people find you online? Where would you want to push them from this interview to go?
We're on all the normal streaming platforms and all that, but the easiest place would probably just go directly to the website, ga20band.com. And then from there, you can spiral off into social media or streaming or downloading or buying the album. We have a big merch store there if you like vinyl. So ga20band.com.
Well, a lot of blues aficionados like vinyl for sure. And I know with supply chain, vinyl took a while to get out this year. Oh, yeah. So congratulations. Now, in the new album, as we wrap up, Crackdown, you got the singles out, but like, what are your top three tracks when people hear this in September? Like, what should they go to?
Two out of the three top ones that I like are out. So Easy on the Eyes, Dry Run, those are out already. And then the opening track on the record is Fairweather Friend. That's probably one of my favorite ones. Those three, which that one's a little bit of a departure. It's not as full blown traditional blues. It's a little garage rock influence in there, you know, 60s melody type deal. So I think I have one right here. Hold on. I was happy with it, the way it came out too. It's got like a metallic foil finish, which was a cool thing. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting one of these.
Oh yeah, that's the great thing about records too. I remember, I have a decent collection, like 200 records, but I love, you know, when you pull out like an old Motown record, you can see like who wrote on it, who produced it, and who did whatever. It's like, I don't know, digitally with Spotify and things like that, you can get streams, which is great, but they haven't made like a way that you can see like liner notes and stuff yet.
I love liner notes and who produced it. I always dig into that. I mean, I guess you can go to All Music or something, but that's kind of a pain in the ass. I'd rather have it on a record, yeah.
Yeah, I wish they made like a digital hologram jacket, you know, where I could be like, oh, that's cool, I could see it. One day, maybe I'll make that. That'll be my
thing. There you go.
But yeah, Matthew, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Deeper Grooves, 88.5 At Home Interviews. We're definitely going to be playing one of the singles from the new record. Thank you so much. We'll circle back to you and your team when links are out. Right. But thank you so much for your time. We look forward to keeping the conversation going, learning more about your career as these new albums develop and playing more music in the future.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. We'll talk soon.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Deeper Grooves, Season 5, Show 46, all about GA20 on Coal Mine and their new album, Crackdown, which is their third full-length release. The band creates on this one an unvarnished, ramshackle blues that is at once traditional and refreshingly modern at the same time. It expands on their previous releases. You know, they also had a release of Hound Dog Taylor tunes. You should definitely check that out. They find inspirations on all the edges of the genre, electric blues, and they even have some shades of the Ramones. Crackdown is rowdy and fun, filled with instantly memorable and well-crafted songs. I think you should go check out that album on all streaming platforms and come back next week as we talk to their label mate and tour mate, Kendra Morris. We'll see you then.